I sort of agreed to do this with fear and trepidation. I mean, we've already heard many excellent talks with lots of future directions indicated, so I'm not exactly sure what to do, but what I decided was I would focus on three problems that indicate things that I think are interesting. So the first one, and I'm going to formulate them in terms of specific problems. So the first one is incidence problems. These are all geometric type problems. And so my problems will have to do with geometry and mainly. So the first one is there's a set in the plane which meets each line in exactly two points. This is Mazur-Kawitz in 1914. So I want to call such a set an M2 set. And the unsolved question here, is there a Borel set that meets every straight line in two points? Exactly two points. Now, this is an interesting geometric problem in itself. And there are various ways to think about this. One way, of course, is that if you fix a direction, then you look at the equivalence relation induced by that direction, and there's easily a transversal for that. What you could think of is, well, for how many of these could you find a simultaneous transversal? So if you leave out just one rotation, don't let the entire rotation group act, but just leave out one direction, then a line in that direction will be a simultaneous transversal. So it should be that if you just put in all the rest of the lines in that direction, you can't get a transversal, of course, but you could do the next best thing, a Borel set that met every equivalence class in exactly two points. There's also, if you give yourself a little more freedom, there is a Borel set that meets every equivalence class in a countable infinite set of points just by taking circles. So it's sort of a question of how well can you get sort of simultaneous things. Now, Arnie Miller showed that if P equals L, of course, there's something less. There's a coanalytic two-point set. And I showed in 1998 that no two-point set can be the union of countably many rectifiable sets. In particular, no F sigma set can meet every straight line in exactly two points. Or more generally, no set that met every line in exactly n points can be sigma rectifiable, the union of countably many rectifiable sets. Now, a rectifiable set, I have to tell you what that means. A set is in the plane is a one set, means its Hausdorff linear measure is positive and finite. And it's rectifiable, means there are countably many rectifiable arcs, such that almost all of E is covered by these arcs. What's not covered is has linear measure zero. So in fact, there's a conjecture of Bezukhovich from the 1930s that if you have an unrectifiable one set, now an unrectifiable set is one that meets every rectifiable arc in a set of measures zero. So it's totally, every one set decomposes into a rectifiable part and a totally unrectifiable part. And Bezukhovich used these in solving this, Kakia problem and other things. But the one question he left ask is if you have an unrectifiable one set, then some line meets it in 3 points. And it's also true that if this Bezukhovich's conjecture is correct, then there are no Borel 2-point sets. And the argument is rather simple. Suppose you had a Borel set that met every straight line in exactly 2 points. Then its H1 measure would be infinite just by Fubini's theorem. So it contains a compact set of positive finite measure. It can't have an unrectifiable part because we're assuming Bezukhovich's conjecture is correct. Well, then we can pull off a compact set from this that's a one set. It'll be rectifiable for the same reason. And we keep going. Now, even after for each countable ordinal alpha, what's left this measure must be positive because otherwise the set would be the union of countably many rectifiable things. So we can pull out this many omega 1 rectifiable sets. Now the theorem is that a rectifiable one set must project to a set of positive measure in every direction except one. So uncountably many of these, there must be some direction such that uncountably many of them project to a set of positive measure in that direction. And that would mean that certainly there's at least 3 of them that project have the same point here in their projections, and that would mean there were 3 points on the line. So anyway, but I just wanted to indicate that I don't think that we have to solve this problem to solve the 2-point problem. I think there's must be some more clever induction arguments possible. What I just indicated on the board was this, that if you have a Borel 2-point set, then it contains only countably many disjoint rectifiable one sets, and therefore must contain an unrectifiable one set. Definition, a subset of the plane is an m set means that if you take a line, then this set meets that line in at least m points, but no more than n. And Larman showed there's an f that no f sigma set can be an m12 set. However, there does exist a closed m13 set. So you're trying to keep control on the incidences. Robert Focking showed that if n is an even integer, then there are finitely many conics whose union is an mn n+2 set, but it's unsolved for n greater than 1 if there's a closed or even Borel MN n plus 1 set. It's unsolved whether for odd n there's an algebraic M sub n n plus 2 set, or more generally, even if you're given a function q from the space of lines into the integers, when is there a Borel set such that every line meets that Borel set in q of L points? So those are the incidence problems. The main thing is trying to get some kind of hold on simultaneous transversals from this point of view. The second problem that I, little circle of problems that I thought about, is Tarski's circle squaring problem. So Tarski asks, are a disk and a square of the same area equidecomposable? So that means that we can partition A up into K pieces, B up into K pieces, and each A sub I is congruent to B sub I. And the answer is no if we place restrictions on the kinds of pieces or our isometry. So Dubin's, Hirsch, and Carus showed in 63 that you can't require the pieces to be Jordan domains. And Richard Gardner showed that if the pieces are to be moved by isometries generating a locally discrete group, it can't be done. So if you restrict the pieces in this manner, or the movements in this manner, it can't be done. And of course, Latzkovich, in a beautiful paper, proved the following theorem, which says that it can be done, and can be done with translation. So if you have subsets of RD bounded and measurable with the same measure, and the box counting dimension of their boundaries is less than n, so they don't have really wild boundaries, then they are decomposable only using the group of translations. Stan Wagon asked in 86 whether this can be done with Borel measurable pieces. And I think this is a really interesting problem. If you look at Latzkovich's proof, it's non-effective. There's sort of tiling problems in there. There's lots of marriage theorems involved in the proof. And trying to make these, effectivize these, would be fascinating. Or maybe it takes an entirely different approach. The conjecture here is by Richard Gardner that if you have A and B are Borel or Lebesgue measurable in RD, that if A is decomposable with B by an amenable group of isometries, then it's equidecomposable with Lebesgue measurable or Borel measurable pieces. So something that seems also along these lines that could be done is maybe in view of the fact that Doherty and Foreman's theorem that you can do the Banach-Tarski paradox with bare property pieces, perhaps you could do the this circle squaring with bare property pieces. That's the second thing. And the The third thing that I want to talk about is just a continuation of Steve Jackson's talk, in a way, about the Steinhaus's problem. And remember, a subset S of a plane is a Steinhaus set, means it meets each isometric copy of Z squared in exactly one point. So this is a simultaneous tiling problem. So if we use only the translations, then here is our tile. What we want is you want S to tile the plane, but you also want it to simultaneously tile for every one of these actions, including the rotations. So it's a simultaneous tile. It's a simultaneous transversal. And the theorem is that it exists. However, I want to show you a theorem we have, that there is no simultaneous tile or that is a Borel set. In fact, it cannot have the Bayer property. And the proof that I'm going to show you works in all dimensions and for all lattices in RD. And just need some simple facts about lattice distances. So enumerate the lattice distances, D1, D2, and so forth, in increasing order. And the exact rate of growth of this sequence is unknown, but it's clearly related to the circle problem, which is counting the exact rate of growth of a number of points in of lattice points in a circle center of the origin radius r. So it grows something like this, pi r squared and big O of r to the beta, where, and the best estimate is beta is 46/73 plus epsilon. And what we want is a half. But the only thing we'll need for Bayer property is that the sequence of gaps goes to zero. If we were doing a Lebesgue measure, at least from one viewpoint, we would need to know more about the rate at which these gaps go to zero. So suppose you have a Steinhaus set in a plane, and it has a Bayer property. Now, since it's a tile for the integers, for the z squared, it's not meager. And it's also not co-meager, because it doesn't meet this translative itself. So take the category open set of S. So there's an open set U so that S is co-meager in U, and the complement is co-meager in the complement of the closure. So this N is the boundary here. It's a closed nowhere dense set. It's the set of points that are not density points of S or of the complement of S. They're ambiguous. So the main lemma for this argument is that there's some isometric copy of L of Z squared that meets in exactly one point. So I'll just show you the argument, that suppose every lattice meets in not at all or at least two points. So pick a point out of N, and now take all the lattices with that as an origin, say, and every one of them must meet N and another point. Well, because there are only countably many lattice distances, there must be an arc, there must be a lattice distance, and an arc on here that's in which S intersect, in which N is co-meager. And since it's, N is closed, it contains that little arc. Now take for each of these points, now do the same thing. Look at the lattices that are centered at these points. And for each one of them, there must be another lattice distance and an arc on the circle at that lattice distance from that point, consisting of points of N. We can get a subarc where we use the same lattice distance and essentially the same angle, which means we can get move on a subarc with the same lattice distance. And so what you trace out will fill in some some open set. So therefore, N is not nowhere dense. So there's a lattice that meets it in exactly one point. So then, also, I want to say that take this point. And there's a lattice that meets it in one point. I want to say there's a distance out here where I want to say there's some distance where the part of S out here is meager. And the reason for that is that S is co-meager in some ball. So there's some point in radius epsilon so that S is co-meager in that ball. So if we go out to a lattice distance to the d sub k and take any ball centered there with radius epsilon, S must be meager in that ball. Because if it's not, then when you put this ball on top of this one, they would have two points in common. And so these two points would be points of S that are a lattice distance apart. So that would mean that in this annulus, S is meager. But since the gaps between the lattice distances go to zero, that would say eventually S is meager. Because these annuli start overlapping. So there's some radius out here, and the part of S out here is meager. Now, for all of these other, I've straightened L out so that it's centered there, and it looks like the standard lattice. So each of these points are not in N, each of these lattice points, and so it's either a density point of S, category density point of S, or a category density point of the complement of S. Well, if it was a density point of S, that would mean there'd be some small ball here where S was co-meager. We'll move that small ball to here. S can't be meager in here, because if it were, then this wouldn't be a point of N. So this, if you move this ball over here, the part of S in this ball must overlap with the part of S in here. So again, you would get two points of S at a lattice distance apart. So every one of these are density points of the complement of S. I only have to worry about, we only have to consider finitely many of them. So we can get small balls where S is meager in every one of them. Now we've piled them up on top here. And since the complement of S is not meager, the part of the complement of S in each one of those, when we stack them all up on top of each other, they all must have a point in common. And of course, we can avoid this meager set out here. So that means if we translate this lattice by that amount, it entirely misses S. That's the argument. So what fails here is there a Lebesgue measurable Steinhaus set in the plane? So if you try to use the Lebesgue density argument, it's quantitative instead of qualitative, and just don't know how to make it. All we do know is that if you have a Steinhaus set, then its measure is 1, simply because of this classic formula for determining the Lebesgue measure of a set. So here's some unsolved problems. Is there a measurable Steinhaus set in the plane? I should point out that Kolonzakis and Tom Wolf showed that the answer is no if we move to higher dimensions. So for ZD, D greater than 2, using Fourier transform methods, there is no Lebesgue measurable Steinhaus set. And there's not one that has a bare property. This same argument works. And a graduate student of mine and myself has shown that this works for 102 other lattices in R3. And these are the lattices whose quadratic forms are regular, or what they're called. They're exactly 102 of them. I don't know whether a Steinhaus set can be connected or bounded. The methods that Steve and I used, part of it, I think, easily, without much difficulty, works in higher dimensions, but the heart of it, I think it's fair to say we haven't got anywhere. So, is there a Steinhaus set in RD? I don't know if it's just the number theory, or the fact that we've got the free group on two generators, or what's coming into play. Here's even one for the plane. Is there a Steinhaus set for the domino lattice? The 2x1 lattice in the plane. For which lattices in RD is there a measurable Steinhaus set? And more generally, for which lattices lambda and subgroups H of groups G, and have some nice group in mind like Scott Adams was talking about, is there a Steinhaus set? And how to show there is no measurable Steinhaus set? Let's see. Do I have 5 minutes or so? Okay. I want to indicate to you how to show there's no measurable Steinhaus set in higher dimensions. I'll do it in R4 for the standard lattice, and this is the easiest. So take a lattice in RD, so it's just the image of ZD under some non-singular linear map, and we look at its dual lattice. And here's a lemma about Fourier transforms. So if you take F in L1, then the following two statements are equivalent. One, that if you sum these translates of F over the lattice, you get a constant almost surely. And two, the Fourier transform is zero for every point in the dual lattice other than the origin. And furthermore, if this holds, then this constant is the determinant of A inverse times the integral of F. So suppose that you have a measurable Steinhaus set for this lattice. Then, as I said, the Lebesgue measure of the lattice, just by this formula for counting Lebesgue measure, is the determinant of A. And so that would mean that the Fourier transform is zero. This would always add up to one. We're just taking, if it's a Steinhaus set for that lattice, and F is a characteristic function of S, this is always 1. It meets every copy in exactly one point. So the transform is 0. And since it's a simultaneous tiling, that would mean for every X whose norm squared is at a lattice distance here, the Fourier transform disappears on all of those circles. So suppose you could do the following. Suppose you could find two transformations, and suppose that the distance set for A inverse transpose, that is a set of all of these, for A is a subset of those for B, and the ratio of the determinants isn't an integer. Then there's no measurable Steinhaus set. And the proof is easy. Suppose there's a Steinhaus set for the lattice induced by B. Then that would mean the Fourier transform vanished on all of these circles. Well, then it vanishes on all of these circles because that's a subset. But then, going backwards, that would say that this sum must be the constant C, would be 1 over the determinant of A times the integral of the characteristic function. The integral of the characteristic function is the determinant of B. This is an integer because it's exactly 1, and this is not an integer. The problem is you can't do this in the plane. But in R4, for example, if you take B to be the identity, so we're doing a standard lattice, and A is this matrix, then all of this is true. So the distance set for A looks like x squared plus y squared plus z squared plus 3 w squared for A inverse transpose. But every integer is a sum of 4 squares. So the real question is, and as I said, you can make this argument work for 102 lattices in R3. I'm sure this can be done in great generality. Thank you.